You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
Pardon the interruption. This might be important.
Meanwhile, at the above-ground underwater suborbital volcano lair...
This is urgent. We need a response team.
We're already putting together the best men. With all due respect, sir, so am I.
I have a plan. It's real!
Mighty Marvel Geeks.
That's what we call ourselves. Sort of like a team.
Team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos. We're a time bomb.
Well then, son, you've got a condition.
Your show about all things Marvel with Mike and Eric.
What a bunch of losers.
That I did know.
These people may be isolated, unbalanced, but I believe with the right push, it can be exactly what we need.
Suit up. I'm bringing the party to you.
I have indeed been uploaded, sir. We're online and ready.
And welcome to another issue of Mighty Marvel Geeks here on Sorcerer Radio and the Weeby Geeks Network. It is your hosts, Eric and Mike, and joining us, kind of hyped it up during the week a little bit.
Have you forgot his name already?
No, I'm trying to build the intro.
Oh, I'm sorry, I interrupted the building. Please continue.
You might know him from the current Thor title. You should hopefully know him from the Star Wars title. We have joining us this week, Mr. Jason Aaron. How are you doing tonight, Jason?
Great. How are you guys doing?
Good. Good. So, I'm going to start off with Thor briefly. When you got word that you're going to be writing Thor as a female, what was that transition like?
Well, you're assuming that I got word, as in that it wasn't my idea, which is not the case. It was the other way around. It was me giving Marvel word that, you know, that's what I wanted to do.
Okay.
Nobody forced me to do anything. I'd been writing Thor for, what, like 2 years? I'd done like 25 issues of Thor God of Thunder. This was kind of always the plan. This was always what I was building towards. I was building towards Thor becoming unworthy, and that being a story in of itself. At the same time, that opened the door for somebody else to pick up the hammer and carry it around for a while. And I knew from the moment I took over the book, you know, that I eventually wanted to do that story. I wanted to do a Beta Ray Bill story, but in a very different, much bigger way, than even what Simonson did with Beta Ray Bill. So that was always the plan. It was never Marvel calling me up and saying, you know, you have to do this, you have to do that. I've never really gotten calls like that about anything I've done. It was me talking to Axel Alonso and saying, I want to do this. I want to make, when Thor becomes unworthy, I want this person to be the next Thor. And he said, great, let's do that.
Okay, so obviously the thought of someone else picking up the hammer is not an entirely new concept.
Right.
What was, in general, the reaction from the folks at Marvel when you said, hey, I want to do this?
People were excited. And again, you know, this was never me going in and saying, you know, I want to change Thor into a woman and that's all I know. I don't have a story. We'll figure it out later. It was me going in to say, this person is going to be the new Thor. This is why, and this is her story. So, you know, it was always about telling a very specific story. And again, I think by the time I'm done, by the time I walk away from Thor, which hopefully will be quite a while yet, I think you'll be able to sit down and read this, hopefully all in one big, you know, massive $300 omnibus, and it'll all make sense. You'll be able to see this is one big story that I've been telling the entire time and will continue to tell. You know, I'm laying tracks for a lot of big stuff to come. So yeah, I mean, everybody was really excited about the change.
Okay, then I'm going to ask this question. Whose idea was it to break the news on The View?
Well, I don't know. that decision I can't take credit for. I don't know, just, you know, one of somebody in Marvel's marketing department. And I was at Marvel when the day that happened. We were having one of our retreats, so I was in the offices. I didn't get to watch The View, but we all knew it happened because all of our phones started blowing up. And then me and Axel and Will Moss, my editor, were pulled out of the room to start doing interviews with Time Magazine and all these different newspapers. So yeah, I mean, it exploded in a huge way and became a big mainstream story, which was cool. But, you know, I mean, I never thought of that, and I never really expected that. I never really it's harsh to say I didn't care about it, but it didn't matter in terms of the story I wanted to tell, you know? I mean, it was really cool. It's cool to have a comic book story break out in that way. I mean, they mentioned it on the Weekend Update on SNL, which was really cool. And, you know, like friends of my mom who don't know anything about comics knew that Thor was becoming a woman, and that's a weird experience. So all that was really cool, but, you know, it never really changed kind of why we were doing it in the first place and what the story was.
Okay. Well, when the change first was announced on The View and you started all the interview process, did you get a lot of backlash right away? Or, I mean, did it come a little further down the road? I mean...
Oh, no, it was pretty much right away. You know, it was right away. as, you know, as with any big, big change like that to a character that you announce, there's always going to be some backlash. I mean, I was disappointed in that I still, you know, seems certain that if we had just announced that Thor was becoming a different dude, I don't think we would have gotten the same level of backlash. I think the fact that it was a woman taking the role added a different, you know, different sort of edge to the backlash that was really disappointing. But again, that for me, that was all kind of in one ear, out the other. I didn't really care. Again, it wasn't going to change the story I wanted to tell. And that stuff was really drowned out by the opposite, which were all the people who've gotten turned on to the book since the change. You know, when the proof is in the pudding, the sales have been great. It's been a top 10 book since the relaunch. And we get letters every month from people who've jumped on board. So, you know, I don't regret anything we've done. I'm still having a blast writing the book.
These letters that you mentioned getting, how many would you say percentage wise would be people who may not have been into comics at all, but decided, well, this sounds interesting, I'll give it a shot, and then they're drawn into the world of comic books?
Yeah, we've definitely gotten a lot of those. I don't know what percentage. We've gotten some from people who were reading comics but had never read Thor, never cared about Thor before, and now are picking up the book. And yeah, the most gratifying are always the ones where this is someone's first comic, you know, which is great. You feel like you've pulled that person, you know, through the doorway, right? Like you've got them into the door of the comic shop or to the app on the iPad or however they're getting a hold of it. So it's great. It feels great to be that gateway drug for somebody. So yeah, we've gotten a lot of letters like that. I think in the most recent letters column I did, which maybe the next issue, I don't know if it's come out yet. I ran one letter from a guy who said he was a longtime Thor fan who was going to quit the title and gave his reasons, and I gave my answer to his opinion on things. But then after that, we had four letters from people who were brand new to the book. So, you know, it's like, sorry we couldn't please the one guy, but clearly there are loads of people who are jumping on that are, you know, excited about the new direction and the new character.
It's almost like that one line given by the late Leonard Nimoy, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one or the few. I know, and I blew the line completely, you know. It wasn't
that's
exactly
all right.
Like
this
that.
Isn't a Star Trek show. It's a Marvel show. So you're forgiven for that.
Well, Star Trek appeared in Marvel twice as a comic series. So,
oh yeah,
we're covered.
I've got the X-Men Star Trek crossover.
Oh right,
the very first one.
Yeah, I once
there's one after that.
The second time Marvel had Star Trek was after Wrath of Khan. Mm-hmm. I believe. Yeah. So, but there was
let's just keep talking about Star Trek then.
Well, actually,
you know, one of my favorite panels of all time is where in the Star Trek X-Men crossover where they put Gambit into the sick bay, and I think it's like Beast and one other person, and here comes Bones, and he sees the person. It's like, I don't care who it is, he's the wounded, I've got to treat him. He hollers for Nurse Chapel. She walks in and goes, Dr. McCoy, and both Bones and Beast just turn around, what? And then look at each other.
My favorite part of that story was that you said hollers, which makes me feel like I'm back home in Alabama.
I can't help it. I've lived here all my life.
You don't have to apologize. I mean it as a compliment.
Oh, well, thank you then.
Now, I guess we could talk more about Star Trek, but you know, actually,
I wouldn't have much to add about that one.
Well, I will say the first run with Star Trek was 79 to 81. The series lasted 18 issues. And then when they made the return, this is according to Wikipedia, when they made the return, it was in 96 and ran for about 18 months. But But how did you end up winning the lottery, becoming the writer for the return of Star Wars to Marvel?
I don't know. I don't know what I did right. I'm just happy whatever it was that I did it. Because I just got a phone call from one day from Axel, and he just asked me if I wanted to do Star Wars, and I said yeah, even though we didn't know. I didn't know what the book would be, what we were really talking about. Didn't know anything about it other than Star Wars. And I said, sure, I'll do that. That sounds good.
I mean, really, did you need to know anything other than, hey, it's Star Wars?
Not really. I mean, that was the kind of thing where you drop everything else and come running, right? And I did. I had to come off of Amazing X-Men sooner than I was planning to, which stunk. But again, it was Star Wars. And you can't really say no to that, right?
Oh, God, no.
What type of pressure was there to, one, be the writer for the return, and then to also be following up what Dark Horse had done?
I never really worried about the pressure. I've done a lot of high profile stuff. I mean, following Garth Ennis on The Punisher, I mean, for me, that was like as pressure filled as it can get, because I'm such a huge fan of Garth, and in particular, a huge fan of what he did on The Punisher. But for me, those are the kind of situations you should get excited about as a creator. You know, if you're not excited to step up to the bat in those kind of situations and step into the footsteps of some of your favorite creators, then, why are you doing this job? So I'm always excited about that. So I never hesitated, never worried about the pressure, dove right into Star Wars. I think the only moment where I realized, like, holy cow, this is kind of a big deal, was when I first got the email where they told me the book had sold over 1 million copies. That's when I went back and thought, like, well, I need to go read that issue again just to make sure that thing is good, because I'm going to be seeing that book the rest of my life. So that was the only moment, but I never worried. I mean, yeah, it's intimidating, of course. I grew up a Star Wars fan. I love those original films, and I've been a fan of, a lot of the stuff since. I was never like a huge nerd in terms of the expanded universe stuff. I've read some of it here and there. I felt like sitting down to write that first issue, it was like the first time I sat down to write Punisher or sat down to write Spider-Man or any of those characters. I got the same sort of tingles and thrills. As a little kid inside me was freaking out.
Did you ever read the old Star Wars comics that Marvel put out way back in the day, or any of the Dark Horse for that matter?
Yeah, I read some of those Marvel ones as a kid and liked them. And yeah, I read some of the Expanded Universe stuff, some of the Dark Horse stuff over the years here and there. But I was never like a diehard fan of that stuff. There's some really good stuff. It's just that was never, it's one of the things I kind of read from time to time, instead of being hugely devoted to it.
Well, since your story is, being considered canon now, are we going to see a return of Jackson?
Well, he was on a cover. He was on a variant cover for number one, right?
Oh, so I do have that cover.
He's already been back.
That was the one cover I had to have.
That's probably already one more appearance of Jackson than you ever expected to get, right?
Just to
have him pop up on the cover.
Can I just go ahead as a fanboy, just request, even as just a cameo, the return of Crimson Jack?
Crimson, I don't remember Crimson. Who was
Crimson Jack? Jack? He was a pirate, had his own pirate crew. They had taken over an actual Star Destroyer.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, and he and Solo had a long-standing, let's just say, series of disagreements.
that was, what, between the Empire and Jedi adaptations?
Actually, I think that was between A New Hope and Empire.
Okay.
I'll just say you never know. I mean, the stuff we're doing right now, coming out of the gate with this book, it was my main ambition, I think everybody's main ambition involved with it, to make it feel like the continuation of the original movie. So we wanted it to seem like it was 1977 and you just come out of seeing Star Wars, and here's a comic that's the next chapter structure of that story. So we wanted it to look and feel like that. Because, it, you know, again, you look at our lifetimes and we haven't gotten a whole lot of that, right? I mean, we had three movies with those characters. And even amidst all that various expanded universe stuff, there wasn't a lot that dealt with that time period, you know, with those characters in that time period. The Lucasfilm was always, you know, pretty restrictive about what you could do with them. And it was really, you know, Dark Horse just got to do a comic set in that time period just a couple of years ago. So that was a pretty recent thing. So for me as a fan, I was always hungry for more of that. You know, I wanted to see more of those characters that I fell in love with doing the things that I like to watch them do. So that was my main ambition with this book, is to make it feel like those movies out of the gate. Now that said, it doesn't mean we can't still mix things up and cross the streams in different ways, bring in new characters, bring back some of those old characters from the comics and novels of the past. And we can do all that. And we've talked about doing all of that. And you'll actually get a new character who shows up pretty soon. I think it's issue 4. We get our first new character. And okay, if you're reading Darth Vader, Kieran Gillen's Darth Vader series, it's loaded with new characters.
Right, right.
So yeah,
I haven't had a chance to sit down and read it.
It's really good. It's really good.
I am caught up on yours, and I'm loving the story so far.
Cool. Thank you.
Absolutely love the story.
I've subscribed to it. I haven't had a chance to sit down and read it myself yet. Stress yet, because when I saw, you know, Star Wars is coming back to Marvel, I saw Star Wars, you know, the issue number one with all the variants, I'm just kind of like, oh yes, I must get. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it, because everything that I've heard and seen and read says, you know, you're spot on with what you're setting out to do. Yeah.
I guess talk us through, if you can, the storyline for the first two books on what's happening, since they're out and we're not spoiling anything future.
Well, you know, it picks up a short time after the end of the original Star Wars, after, you know, episode 4, New Hope. So right after the Rebels have scored this huge victory by blowing up the Death Star. So we pick up with the Rebels trying to push their advantage and stage this big offensive against the Empire. So we open with, you know, our main cast of Han, Luke, Leia, Chewie, and the droids on a mission to sabotage an Imperial weapons factory. And, you know, they go in with what they think is a solid plan. Of course, things don't work out quite like they expected. Chaos ensues, and we get our characters running for their lives from lots of stormtroopers and other bad guys. And they're also, again, it's an Imperial weapons factory. So the toy box is kind of wide open there. So we get to see lots of vehicles from some of the other movies come into play.
I love the touch of you having Luke recognizing that there was slave labor there and freeing them as well. Almost like a underground railroad on top of the rebellion.
Yeah, which also gave John Cassidy the chance to draw all sorts of various Star Wars aliens from a lot of different points of the Star Wars timeline. So that was really cool.
Excellent. I guess let's go back some. How you kind of got started in your comic career by winning a contest that Marvel had put on?
Yeah, that was my first published comic gig, as I won a Marvel Comics Talent Search contest back in 2001. And then the story I got to write, which was an 8-page Wolverine story, came out in 2002 in issue Wolverine. So yeah, that was my first big break. Didn't really lead to anything. You know, it wasn't exactly the next thing I knew superstardom. But it meant really for me, just for the first time, I kind of thought, you know, hey, maybe I could actually take a stab at doing this for a living. You know, I'd grown up my entire life a comic book fan, you know, in Alabama for the most part, where there weren't a lot of dudes in my neck of the woods who worked in comics. There weren't any. There's, you know, Mark Waid's the only guy who from Alabama who writes comics, and he wasn't living there when I was. So there was nobody I could go to talk to about, how do you break into comics? And back then, you pretty much just had to move to New York. You had to live in New York. Even though I was a lifelong comic book fan, and even though I knew from a really young age that I wanted to write, I just never had any idea how to make a career in comics. So winning that talent search contest really opened the door for the first time. And so I just started pitching everything I could think of. I pitched at Marvel. I was pitching Punisher stuff, Captain America stuff, everything. And then, eventually got some books picked up by Vertigo over at DC. And those were my first, full-time comic gigs. I did a Vietnam War book called The Other Side, and then a crime book called Scouts, and sent copies of those issues to Axel Alonso at Marvel. And he called me up one day and asked me to write a Wolverine story. So even though I kind of broke in some sense with this talent search contest and with the Wolverine story, it really took me going off and doing my own stories, doing stuff for Vertigo before Marvel called again and said, hey, why don't you write some more stuff for us? Which I think is kind of always the way. Nobody really breaks in writing Batman or writing Spider-Man. You kind of got to show you can do your own stuff and tell your own stories. And then the good editors at those companies will look at that and say, okay, this person can write this, so maybe if I put him on this character, that'll work. And Axel especially was the master at that. So he could look at the stuff I was doing and then put me on Wolverine and Ghost Rider and Black Panther and kind of all the stuff I started out doing. But that still, that took 5 or 6 years from when I won the talent search contest to when I really started doing big stuff with Marvel. Probably the most I've worked in 5 years in my comic book career, even though there was nothing to show for it. There was nothing published. But it was me learning what I was doing, me not having a social life so I could sit at home and work on scripts nonstop. Okay. Once I started doing Wolverine and Ghost Rider and all that stuff, I've been at Marvel ever since.
Okay, you just mentioned all these characters, really good characters that you've written for at Marvel. Are there any floating out there that you just sit around going in the back of your head going like, God, if I could just write for this guy or this girl, or just...
Yeah, of course. There's one that I can't name because I might actually get to write them, so we'll keep that a secret. But
yes, Impossible Man's coming back.
Exactly.
I was thinking Irving Forbush, but that's just...
I've always talked about what a huge Fantastic Four fan I am. I love the FF, in particular Ben Grimm, who might be my favorite Marvel Comics character. I mean, Spider-Man's pretty much the best Marvel Comics character, but I think the Thing might be my favorite. And I've written the Thing before, just in little appearances here and there. Whenever I'm writing something, I'm always looking for a way to wedge the Thing in there so I get to write. I've never written the rest of the FF, so that would be cool someday to tackle the Fantastic Four. And I would love to write more Spider-Man, too. I mean, I've written him and things here and there. I did a Spider-Man Wolverine miniseries, which was a lot of fun, but I've never done, a full-on Spider-Man project. So, someday I'd love to tackle that, too.
If you wouldn't mind kind of walking our listeners through the process of your part of bringing a comic book to life, how far out, work backwards from the release date, about how far out do you usually try to write the script?
Well, as far out as I can. I don't think any writer in comics is ever quite as far ahead of deadlines as they would like. You always hate to be late as a writer, because everything starts with the script, So if there's no script, you've got all these other people waiting on you before they can do their job and get paid. So you don't ever want to be the thing that's holding up other people from getting paid. I can usually do at least a script a week, maybe one and a half a week if it's a really good week. Sometimes it might take a little bit longer than a week if it's something I've never written before. Like just the last couple weeks. I did the first issues of the two Secret Wars tie-in books that I'm doing that just got announced, which is Thor's, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a whole bunch of Thor's. And Weird World, which is sort of a sword and sorcery kind of book. So just wrote the first two issues of those back to back. So that was tough, and then it was new projects. So a bunch of characters I'd never written before, which is always a little tougher to just to kind of find your voice for those characters or figure out what you're doing. But yeah, I mean, it takes me, you know, again, about a week to write a script and send it off and to my editors and maybe get notes back, maybe have to change some stuff. And then it goes off to somebody to draw, and it takes them, you know, depends. Some guys can draw a book a month, some guys can't. But once it's done, I'll either do a lettering draft where I'll go back and look at the art and look at my script and you know, change stuff, tweak the dialogue. Sometimes just because it doesn't sound right, or sometimes maybe stuff changed in the art or whatever. And then, you know, the last thing is you kind of get a lettered version of that. You get just a black and white lettered PDF to look over and make any last minute changes and drive the poor letterer nuts as they have to re-letter stuff. And then that's you know, that might not happen until the Friday when the book is going to print. You know, at Marvel, everybody is working their butts off. Everybody's super busy, so Friday is always a tough day when you work at Marvel, because that's the day everything's you know, that week's books are going to print. So it's a mad dash to get everything ready. So I've got lettering corrections I've got to do tonight, so to have done for tomorrow. So yeah, and then next thing I know, you know, it's like 3 weeks later, I go to the local comic book shop and see that book on the shelf.
Or in case of like Star Wars number one, see the fourth printing on the shelves.
Yeah, I think we're up to the fourth printing now, yeah. which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to Mighty Marvel Geeks with Jason Aaron as our special guest. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Crisis for the geek kind. Top geek officials admit they underestimated the hipster's defense capability. Join the geek revolution and save the galaxy. Geeks from all over the globe are joining up to fight for the future. They're doing their part. Are you? Want to know more? Join Weeby Geeks and the Geek Revolution and save the world. Service guarantees citizenship. Listen to Weeby Geeks podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, or online at weebygeeks.net. Weeby Geeks, your voice for the geek revolution. Want to know more?
Welcome to the new sound of Sorcerer Radio. Version 3.0.
Sorcerer Radio presents the Sorcerer Radio app version 3.0.
We have the technology.
Check out our brand new Sorcerer Radio app for all iDevices as well as Android devices.
Better, stronger, faster.
Streaming Disney music 24/7. App highlights include a new broadcast window that shows you what you're listening to and what's coming up next. Multitasking so you can listen to SR as well as perform other tasks on your iPhone.
Gorge!
Listener access to all of our daily shows. The new interface, a new buffered stream, auto reconnect when signal is lost, visual EQ, pause, rewind, and scrub features.
My goodness!
And the new SR info area. Get your virtual Disney World fix today with the new Sorcerer Radio app version 3.0 from Sorcerer Radio.
Be careful with that. It's extremely dangerous.
SRSounds.com.
Rebel Force Radio.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary.
With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Weekly live shows and podcasts.
RFR.
Like Rebel Force Radio on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Rebel Force Radio.
Your new source for the Force.
Rebel Force Radio. With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack. Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Sorcerer Radio. SRSounds.com.
Chip and Company is your daily Disney fix for Disney news, park planning, giveaways, and so much more. Visit our friends from Chip and Company at chipandco.com to get you up to date on all things Disney.
a magic beyond anything you could ever imagine.
Meet the Magic is a site where you can find Disney sites, blogs, and fun new Disney friends. Learn how to save money or make your trip more magical.
Prepare to have your senses awakened.
Visit meetthemagic.com and follow her on Twitter at meetthemagic, a proud partner of Sorcerer Radio.
It's an adventure too magical to miss.
Can we go again?
Dan Barnes here, inviting you to take a ride with me on an all-new edition of E-Ticket Time. I'll be playing the best ride-through audio from all your favorite Walt Disney World attractions. No fast pass required here. Just tune in Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern, only on Sorcerer Radio at srsounds.com.
I am a Jedi. Like my father before me.
Are you a fan of Disney, Star Wars, and Marvel? Well, look no further than JediMouseketeer.com. On this geeky fan site, you'll find the latest news, videos, information on movies, comics, and more. Check out JediMouseketeer.com and follow him on Twitter at JediMouseketeer, a proud partner of Sorcerer Radio.
Remember, the Force will be with you, always.
Getting ready for your next visit to Walt Disney World? Well, why not check out Disney Trip Tips Fridays at 1 p.m. on Sorcerer Radio at srsounds.com with me, Sandy Alexander. Disney favorites from the parks, resorts, movies, and TV, and the tips that the family and I have used on our many visits to Walt Disney World. And if you have any tips or photos you'd like to share, you can post them at the Disney Trip Tips Facebook page. You can even follow me on Twitter at Disney Trip Tips. Disney Trip Tips on Sorcerer Radio. All Disney music all day long. SR Sounds.
Hi, I'm Tony.
And I'm Krista. Tune into our show, Stars and Motor Cars, Saturday afternoons at 6 p.m. Eastern on Sorcerer Radio.
Every week you'll hear us chat with Disney legends, Imagineers, and actors like Pat Carroll, the voice of Ursula.
And I help?
Yes, I do.
Disney legend and Imagineer Bob Gurr.
Pedro Hare, the voice of Belle.
Feast! Disney Resort TV's Stacey J. Oswald.
And author Ridley Pearson.
And Bill Farmer, the voice of Goofy.
Something wrong here.
And so many more. You'll also hear your favorite Disney Parks Parade music.
Follow us on Twitter at Disney Podcaster and on Facebook.com/Disney Parks Podcast.
To get even more Disney fun, download our sister show, the Disney Parks Podcast, on iTunes. Tune in to Stars and Motor Cars, presented by the Disney Parks Podcast. Saturday afternoons at 6 p.m. Eastern,
3 p.m. Pacific, only on Sorcerer Radio.
SRSounds.com.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Mighty Marvel Geeks on Sorcerer Radio and Weebie Geeks Network. I'm Eric. This is my co-host, Mike. And we've got in the studio with us special guest, Jason Aaron.
Secret Lair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Secret Lair. The above ground, underwater
suborbital volcano lair.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should be doing that in my Ted Knight voice.
Meanwhile, at the suborbital volcano lair.
Yeah, Shield treated us well with this place.
Shield likes us.
How do I get out of this place? Am I stuck here? Am I trapped in the...
Thankfully, we have you Skyped in, so you're not trapped here.
I'm good to go.
So you're good to go. If not, I think the Force is definitely strong enough with you. It wouldn't be a problem.
Good segue.
So what ended up being the character or the title that you worked on that ended up being your big break with Marvel?
Wolverine, without a doubt, Wolverine. I won a Marvel Talent Search contest and got to do a little 8-page Wolverine story that saw print, which was the first comic script I'd ever written. And then I went off and did my own stories for about 5 years. And got a phone call from Marvel, and they asked me to do more stuff. And the first thing I did was more Wolverine. I did a one-shot standalone issue, and that led to a four-part story, and that led to a miniseries, and that led to an ongoing gig, and then another ongoing gig, and then a team book. So I ended up writing Wolverine in one form or another for like 6 or 7 years, I think. Solo stuff, and then I wrote Wolverine and the X-Men Definitely Wolverine. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that furry Canadian with the claws.
What is it about? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Mike. No, go ahead.
What is it about Wolverine that keeps you coming back to him? That you think is the essential strength that makes him such an enduring character?
Well, he's dead now, so I can't come back to him.
Well, this is the comics. We know death is just a temporary.
He'll be back after Secret Wars.
Yeah, there you go.
No comment. No, the thing I always liked is that he was a character you could do a lot of different kinds of stories with. So I think in all those years that I wrote Wolverine stuff, I got to do a lot of different kinds of stories. I did some that were really dark and gritty. I did some that were really silly and kind of every different sort of genre. So he's one of those guys you can put in all that different kind of stuff and make it work. And it was, I really liked running him through the ringer and putting him on a very specific journey. So I think all that Wolverine stuff I wrote was written at different times for different books. It wasn't necessarily written to be read as one story. But if you read it as one story, they put out like omnibuses and trades of all my Wolverine stuff collected. So you can read it as one story. And if you do, I think there's a thread that runs through all of it. And Wolverine is on this kind of journey as he's becoming a little bit more hopeful, developing a sense of faith, and kind of growing up. I mean, that was the main thing, is I wanted him to mature a little bit. I think as my comic career kind of coincided with me getting married and having kids. So I think as I was kind of dealing with becoming a dad, I wanted Wolverine to deal with some of those same kind of issues. So, he grew up a little bit, and then I of course had a tremendous amount of fun installing him as the head of the Jean Grey School and making him, the Professor X for the X-Men, and making him be suddenly the dad who's not cool anymore. I had a lot of fun with that for like, I don't remember, 50 or so issues of Wolverine the X-Men, however many we did, I don't remember.
At any time, did you get a chance to consult or I don't know if consult's the right word, but meet with Chris Claremont and be blessed with the job you've been doing with him going, you're treating my character right?
No, I've never met Chris Claremont. Never met Lin Meaney either, who I guess is the guy who really created Wolverine initially. I think Claremont's still around a little bit, has been lately, but hasn't been doing too much X-Men stuff during the time that I was there. So now I've never gotten to meet him. But yeah, I mean, of course, I grew up reading Claremont X-Men, just like everybody who's my age. Maybe this is not the podcast to talk about it, but as a kid, I was more a DC guy, quite honestly. I grew up with like New Teen Titans.
I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. For me, I have more DC titles available to me than I did Marvel with where I was in the country. It just seemed like, if it wasn't Spider-Man or if it wasn't the Avengers. And then I keep looking back. It's like, besides Star Wars, I was reading West Coast Avengers. I was actually reading Epic titles and Star titles. And, sure. Which is the licensing and creator-owned stuff. But with the different works you've had, have you had Hollywood come to you and go, we really like this particular story arc you've done? How would you go about doing a Hollywood treatment of it?
In terms of Marvel stuff, you mean?
Correct.
No. I mean, I've never met anybody from Marvel Studios. That's kind of a whole different operation. So I've never consulted on anything. I go see the movies opening night, just like everybody else. Okay. And maybe eventually something I wrote pops up on the screen, and that would be cool. I'm always just happy that I get to do the comics. I have no ambitions to move to Los Angeles. I never looked at comics as like a stepping stone to making movies. I'm really happy and really content with what I do. Like we were talking before, kind of about the process. I love the fact that I get to sit down at my desk and type up this script and send it off to some people who draw it, and then a little bit later I can go to the comic book shop and pick it up, and that's there's a finished product right there. So it always feels like, even working for a big company like Marvel, you're kind of just a little group of people in a room making this thing, and then it's out there for everybody to see. So I love that part of my job. you know, movies are a very, very different sort of deal. But yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the Marvel Studio stuff, of their movies, and I'm really excited about the Daredevil TV show. I've heard really good things about that.
What's, outside of Logan, what's been your other, if you had to say, other favorite character to write?
I mean, Thor, probably right now. I mean, for me, you know, as a fan, as a kid growing up, there would be characters I would kind of be more attracted to than others. But I was never a guy, especially as a writer, who was just gravitated towards characters. You know, I mean, as a creator, when I first broke in at Marvel, you know, I won this talent search contest. I started pitching stuff. I was pitching for Punisher and all sorts of different books and not going anywhere. So eventually I realized instead of just chasing after characters, I should chase after editors. So Axel Alonso was a guy who's, you know, I liked the stuff he had edited when he was at Vertigo, and I could look at all the stuff I was reading at Marvel, and most of them were by him. So I could say, you know what, if I met that guy, we might have very similar sensibilities. And then lo and behold, turns out we do. So he's, you know, it's no coincidence, he's kind of the guy who's the entire reason I'm at Marvel. Because he's the guy and hired me and started giving me jobs. So the characters I would write were the characters that he was editing. It was not me coming in saying, you know, I've got this Wolverine story I've been dying to tell. I have to write Wolverine. It was Axel saying, I write Wolverine. Why don't you write me a Wolverine story? And Axel saying, you want to write Ghost Rider? Do you want to write Black Panther? So I think I've always carried that through, is that I, you know, that sort of relationship and environment to me is the important part. I don't have characters that I hate and characters that are, you know, I love above and beyond all. Certainly there are characters like we talked about earlier that I really like, that I would like to write. But for me, you know, I think you can figure out a story with any character. You know, I mean, the Swamp Thing was sort of a forgettable character on a low-selling book when Alan Moore took it over and made it something very different. So I think it's always about figuring out what that story is to tell with that character. Which is always a little bit, I think, something that's different between writers and fans, is that some fans get hung up on loving this character and hating that character. And I don't hate any characters. When I was writing Wolverine, people would ask me, how come you hate Cyclops? If I don't hate Cyclops, Wolverine hates Cyclops, you know? Don't confuse his words with mine.
Okay, on that...
Did any of that make sense?
Yes, it actually does. It actually does. To that point, are there any of the characters that you've created along the way that you just look back and go, you know, they turned out going over a whole lot better than I thought they would? I mean, I'm not asking for like a favorite. It's just some that may stick out in your mind that you may not have thought of them as a major character. Or, well, here's a guy, you know, he's good for a foil in one or two issues, but, you know, he keeps coming back. He's kind of like the Phil Coulson of the movie lot, where it just kind of surprises you with how they've turned out.
I don't know. I mean, I think if you looked at all the characters I've created, you got kind of a motley assortment of oddballs. So I don't know which ones really stand out. I mean, I created a lot of New Mutants when I was doing Wolverine and the X-Men. I really liked this character called Eyeboy, who was just covered with eyeballs. I had a lot of fun with him. When I did Ghost Rider, I created lots of different versions of Ghost Rider, some from throughout history, some from different parts of the world. But there was one who was kind of like a 1940s sort of... you know, Jack Kirby kind of tough street kid Ghost Rider. There's like a Ghost Rider sidekick, actually, who was named Knuckles O'Shaughnessy. So I'm always surprised. I get a lot of people come up and ask me, when are you going to bring back Knuckles O'Shaughnessy? Which I always think is funny. So I don't know. I mean, I'm really happy with the villain that I created in the beginning of Thor, which was Gore the God Butcher, you know, who was a big part of the first two big arcs of Thor, God of Thunder, and kind of his influence has sort of reverberated through the series, even up until now. And we got Dario Agger, who I'm still writing, who's the new head of Roxxon, who's also secretly a Minotaur, so he changes into a giant bull man. So he's been really fun to write. So, you know, I mean, it's always fun to create characters and throw them into the midst of that sandbox, right? You know, or Roz Solomon is a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that that I created in Thor: God of Thunder, who's a S.H.I.E.L.D. environmentalist. So she's, you know, an environmentalist with a gun and a flying car. And her name is Rosalind Solomon. And Roz, of course, was Jack Kirby's wife, and Solomon was Stan Lee's mother's maiden name. So she's a bit of an obvious tip of the hat to the creators of Thor. So yeah, I mean, it's fun to you know, again, like, it's cool just the first place to get to write characters that were created by Jack Kirby and created, you know, drawn by Jack Kirby and all these other different creators I've been a fan of. But then to make up somebody and have them stand beside that character is another kind of crazy thrill.
Well, you mentioned earlier you got two titles coming out with Secret Wars. What other upcoming projects do you have coming up with Marvel
that you can talk about?
Nothing that I can talk about.
Okay.
Well, then I'll go to my backup question. With Star Wars, when you submit your script for Star Wars, obviously it goes to Marvel first. Do they send it off to Lucasfilm for their approval as well, or how's that work?
Yeah, there's a Lucasfilm story group, and they're actually credited in the comics if you look in the credits, which is a new story group, a new kind of deal. You know, as now in Star Wars production is ramping up on all sorts of different stuff. You know, there's the new Rebel series, there are all the new movies and everything else going on. The story group is a part of all of that. So they're kind of the gatekeepers for everything and the people who make sure all these different trains that are running don't all crash into each other. So yeah, everything we write goes to them. We get notes back from them, which has been great. I mean, it hasn't been it's an extra step of the process than what I'm used to at Marvel. But so far, it's been really fun and beneficial. You know, we've done meetings with the story group. When I first got the gig, you know, not long after I first got that phone call from Axel asking me if I wanted to write Star Wars, we all flew out to San Francisco to meet with Lucasfilm. So it was me and Jordan White, my editor, and people from Marvel, and John Cassaday, who's drawing my book, and Kieran Gillen, who's writing the Darth Vader book. So we all went and sat in the room with the story group from Lucasfilm and talked about, you know, this is what we want to do. And, you know, so all the stuff we're doing now was born in those meetings in that room. And then we just had another meeting like that about a month ago where we talked about the stuff we'll be doing through the end of this year into next year. So those are really fun. I mean, I'm used to doing stuff like that at Marvel. We have these retreats a few times a year where a bunch of us sit in a room and talk about comic books for 8 hours a day for 3 days straight. So it's cool to be in the room with the Lucasfilm people because they know Star Wars like all of us at Marvel know comics. They talk in that same kind of shorthand. They're quoting lines from the movies and they're rattling off characters where I don't even know who they're talking about sometimes. So it's cool to know that those people kind of have your back because, you know, again, I like a lot of the expanded universe stuff, but I wasn't a huge devotee of it. So I don't know a lot of that stuff. And even though it's all kind of been retired and we're starting over with the new canon, you still want to know kind of the playing field that you're on. So the Lucasfilm story group and all that stuff.
Okay, on that subject, the Star Wars website had carried the announcement that the expanded universe was going to become Legends and all the stuff going forward was not going to follow that, but the creators going forward would have, I think they said, you know, unlimited access to the material from the expanded universe to incorporate as they saw fit. Are we reading that correctly? I mean, do you have access? Have they just said, you know, hey, you know, if you want to bring in this person, like say, if we want to say, you're going to see Admiral Thrawn at some point or Dash Rendar at some point, you know, do you have that creative freedom to pull that in?
I think so. I think it's kind of a case by case basis. You know, I mean, I think all that stuff is kind of up in the air. It's more they don't really want to be beholden to anything that they don't want to be beholden to. So I think maybe. I mean, you just kind of figure it out as you go. I mean, again, I think with the stuff we'll be doing, you'll see some of that. You'll see references to stuff and characters popping up who popped up before. But some stuff may be different, maybe changed. Some characters maybe never existed. I don't think you know. I think we'll all just be kind of figuring that stuff out together across all the different platforms, you know, in the films, TV, video games, novels, everything. Everybody's kind of in the same boat.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask, before we get any further, would you join us for our weekly segment where we talk about our picks for New Comic Book Day, which will be for November. Man, I really jumped. For March 11th, 2015, for the show.
Sure.
Okay, so then I guess I'll do my little spiel like I usually do. It is that time of the week, the time that everyone loves. It is It is time for the Mighty Marvel Geeks pick New Comic Book Day picks for March 11th, 2015. But we kind of talked a little bit before show and a little bit in email. Kind of tradition with our guests, we ask our guests your top three Marvel reads for the month.
So I can go ahead?
Anytime. Yeah. Love to hear what you recommend.
Well, I would recommend, I think just this past week, a couple of really great books came out. One was Spider-Woman number 5, which is, even though it's number 5, it's kind of still like a first issue. The first 4 issues of Spider-Woman were part of the Spider-Verse event. Number 5 is kind of sets a brand new status quo, new costume for Jessica Drew, takes things in a very different direction. It's got art by Javier Rodriguez, who you may know from stuff he'd done on Daredevil with Mark Waid. It's written by my friend and fellow Kansas City guy, Dennis Hopeless. And that 55th issue and the direction it kind of sets this book on, I thought was really, really exciting. It was one of my favorite books I've read in a while, and probably my favorite thing Dennis has maybe ever done. So I was really, really excited about that book. And the same day that came out, I think it was the same day, you had Spider-Gwen number 1, another female spider character. This is the alternate reality version of Spider-Woman, where it's Gwen Stacy who became her world's version of the spider character. And it's written by my friend Jason Latour and drawn by Robbie Rodriguez. And that character debuted as part of Spider-Verse in a one-shot, I think, Edge of Spider-Verse. Became a big sensation. So this is the beginning of her ongoing series. So it's been a great month so far, I think, for women spider characters, and both those books are really, really good.
So it's interesting here, Spider-Woman actually gets some love. You don't hear too many people really talk about Spider-Woman as being one that you should pick up monthly.
Well, again, read that issue 5. Even if you haven't read issues 1 through 4, pick up issue 5, and it's like a brand new issue, like the beginning of the series. Really, really great jumping in point.
Cool.
So my third one, a non-spider title, which I think has had 2 issues out so far, is Ant-Man, which is written by Nick Spencer, which is... really kind of blew me away. I mean, I've never been a particularly big fan of Ant-Man. I was never a guy who was like screaming, you know, when are we going to get more Ant-Man comics? But man, this is a really, really good book. And that first issue in particular just blew me away. And I don't think anybody can read that first issue and not want to know what happens next. That was a tremendous story right out of the gate. You know, story with very much a beginning, middle, and end in that first issue, but still sets the stage and makes you want to follow that character around and see what they do next. So I've been really, really impressed with that book so far.
Cool. Well, Eric, why don't you start off with your first pick for this week?
My first pick for the week is Spider-Man 2099 number 10, written by Peter David, pencillered with William Sliney. Am I pronouncing that right? I think. Miguel O'Hara has finally found his way back to 2099, but none other than the malicious Maestro has taken control of the dimension. Looks like Spidey may have to call in some strange backup.
Okay. My first pick of the week, I'm sure you probably know what direction I'm going with my past history. Squirrel Girl, Dupe. Well, I'm going to throw a twist. I'm not going to go with the obvious ones. My first pick is The Amazing Spider-Man Special number 1. It's written by Jeff Loveness, and the penciler is Luca Pizzari. Attack on New Atillion, a blockbuster three-part story spanning Amazing Spider-Man, Inhuman, and all-new Captain America. And of course, my screen decided to go in screensaver mode. There we go. Something big wants to destroy New Atillion. The fact that New Atillion is in the Hudson River puts Manhattan and Spider-Man right in its crosshairs. Amazing Spider-Man special number one. And I'm curious to hear, as we go along with this, what Jason thinks of our picks.
I'm down with them so far. I mean, I haven't read either one of those books yet. I get a sneak peek that I get the books before they come out, but I haven't read those yet.
Okay. So we'll move on to number two. What do you have as your number two book, Eric?
Okay. As tempted as I was to go with Deadpool, I'm actually going with Spider-Man and the X-Men number four. It's Spider-Man versus Beast in a knockdown, drag-out, no-holds-barred science fair, where somebody at the Jean Grey stool knows Spider-Man's secret identity, and it's not someone who likes him. Plus, the incredibly short career of the all-new Sinister Six.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go with one of the obvious picks, partially because I also like this character's theme song. I'm going with Howard the Duck, number one. Howard returns. What a great year. We have the return of Star Wars, and we have the return of Howard the Duck.
You had been waiting a long time to bust out that theme song, hadn't you? Been waiting years for that.
If you only saw what his soundboard lineup looks like. Yeah.
Well, I thinned it down, but yeah, the soundboard had every soundtrack for every Marvel Sony and Marvel Fox film, and of course, you know, Howard the Duck, Blade, and everything prior to where we're at now.
Mm-hmm. Jason, do you remember Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, the cartoon?
Absolutely,
series?
I do. If you go to the Spider-Friends website, which is sort of the main website devoted to that show, the website is run by my best friend from grade school, John Faulkner. It's another Alabama guy. So yeah, absolutely. I grew up on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
This man tripped me out a few weeks ago because I referenced it, and without saying a word, he just hit it, and there it was.
Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, Iceman.
Yeah, but I think the one that I really tripped you out with was, and I'm probably going to age Jason just as much. The old 1977 Amazing Spider-Man live-action TV series.
Oh, wow.
I swear, you couldn't do a TV theme in the 1970s without some sort of waka-chicka-waka-chicka in there.
The wah-wah pedal. Yep. So with Howard the Duck, hot off the pages of the post-credit scenes at the end of a popular movie, Howard the Duck is back. Join him as he takes on the weird cases that only a talking duck can crack or quack as the Marvel's Universe resident private investigator. Led Chip Zdarsky and Joe, I'm drawing a blank, Quionis, I probably mispronounced it, guide you through his new world as he takes on the Black Cat and mysterious forces from outer space. So that's the number two pick for me this week, as we took a left turn and came back to it. Yeah.
No, that's a great pick. I'm a huge fan of Chip Zdarsky, so I'm really excited about that book. And I love Howard the Duck is one of those great weird characters from Marvel in the 70s. Absolutely, yeah. It's created by the great Steve Gerber.
Yep.
Who did some of the coolest, weirdest stuff from Marvel in the 70s, which was a decade full of cool, weird stuff from Marvel.
I didn't read him when he first came out, but when I hit college, I was getting back into the books. That was one I was going back, getting the back issues of, was the 70s stuff. And it's I won't tell you how many times I've read it on Marvel Unlimited as well.
Yeah, I'm working my way on that.
up, but it's still really good. Gerber stuff holds up. He was a guy, I think you could tell, was sort of ahead of his time. He was doing stuff nobody else was doing back then. So definitely worth seeking out any of his Marvel stuff from back in the day.
Yeah. So your number three pick, Eric.
My number three pick, and I'm kind of interested to see how Jason thinks of both our third picks for the week. Mine, I am going with Thor number six, written by somebody not sitting a million miles away from us right now. Pretty close to it, I guess. That's the question on everyone's lips, most especially Prince Odinson of Asgard. This issue, he starts to narrow down the list of suspects. Meanwhile, tensions continue to flare between the All-Mother and All-Father. Malekith forges his most dangerous pact yet, and Thor prepares to face her greatest challenge.
Well, my number three pick, of course, I got a song for this one, too. Especially with Saturday Night Live celebrating its 40th. I'm going with Star Wars number three, written by, I'm going to go last name first name last, Aaron Jason. The greatest space adventure of all time continues. The attack on Simoon 1 comes crashing to an end. Will the rebels overcome Vader to strike another blow against the Empire? And is Luke ready to become the Jedi Ben wanted him to be? So those are our six picks for the week. And, of course, you know, Jason's recommendations on what to be reading for Marvel Monthly.
Well, I changed my recommendations. I recommend those last two books that you mentioned. So forget all the ones I was talking about. Make sure you buy Thor and Star Wars first. And if you got money left over, then you can buy that other stuff.
And I'm going to be honest with you, Jason. This, we would have chosen these two if you had not been on the show. Because, I mean, we have been picking the Thors lately, and we have been picking the Star Wars, so.
And it's been a fight on who actually gets the Star Wars title first.
Usually it's whoever claims it first, and so far, you see who's been beating me to the punch on it.
Oh, no, wait. I
got them first.
You got the first two. With the Star Wars title, you got the first two, so it's 2-1. And I think you picked up Vader. I got you last week with Prince of Leia, so.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking of. You got the princess.
But this is also, yeah, you know, with me, like I said, with Howard the Duck, I'm also the guy who picked all five issues of All New Dupe as well. So,
yeah.
So
well, I've subscribed to them. So if that's any consolation.
Well, I'll just say about these new issues of Star Wars and Thor, Thor number six is a big issue in that, you know, the previous version of Thor, Prince Odin's son, has literally got a list of suspects. So he's trying to figure out, you know, who is this woman who's running around with my hammer. So he's starting to mark names off that list. So with issue six, that list of suspects starts to narrow down, and they start to see multiple characters who are on that list pop up in the book. And before too long, we're going to find out which one of them is secretly Thor. So with Star Wars number three, it's sort of the culmination of this opening rebel attack on the Imperial Weapons Factory. That kind of comes to a head, and then we also get a tease of where things will go from here. So yeah, two big issues for both of those series. And gorgeous art on both of them.
Yes.
John Cassaday on Star Wars. Maybe the best looking issue of Star Wars he's done yet.
Wow.
And then Russell Dowderman, who is, I think, also just keeps getting better and better and better on the stuff he's done with Thor. Issue six of Thor is definitely my favorite issue of Thor he's done so far. He and colorist Matt Wilson, I think, are doing amazing work on that series. So I'm really lucky I'm getting to work with all those people.
Excellent. Where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on Twitter under Jason Aaron. It's probably the easiest way, where I post about Alabama football and professional wrestling and sometimes about comics.
I'll take two of the three. I'm going to have to go LSU football.
Oh, Mike, I'm glad you told me now, as we're almost done. This should have gone a completely different direction.
Well,
am I talking to an Auburn fan and an LSU fan? Is that what
you're talking to an Auburn graduate? I don't know about him.
Oh, man.
Well, I did not go to LSU.
You guys suckered me into this.
I did not go to LSU, but having lived in the state for long enough, and it's one of those, it's like, you know, for college basketball, I bleed blue. I got to go with my birth state of Kentucky. Coming from Kentucky, it's Kentucky basketball, and it's the Kentucky Derby. It's the horses. It's, you know, it's bred in you. But
at least we're all SEC here.
All That's SEC
true.
West.
That is true. Yeah.
Or no,
I live in.
No, Kentucky's not in the West, dude.
No, I'm LSU talking for is football. Though. I'm talking right. football.
Yeah, football. There you go. There you go.
Well, I live in Kansas now, so I'm up here in Big 12 country.
Bless
you. The Big 12 with its 10 teams. You know, makes sense of that.
These
people don't know football. They talk about basketball all the time. I don't know what to do with these people. So it's always great to talk about them.
I was there for a while when I lived in Oklahoma City, back when the Big 12 was actually the Big 8.
There you go.
So, Eric, where can they find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Uncle Servo for various sundry geekery and especially Marvel stuff. So
you can find me representing the show at Marvel Geeks, at Facebook at Mighty Marvel Geeks at Facebook, where we got our nice picture of Agent Coulson showing the world he loves Mighty Marvel. Okay, we altered a screen cap, but...
Yes, we altered a screen cap. But you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at all, Jason?
I have. I'm not caught up on it. But yeah, I have. I think this season's been really good from what I've seen so far.
Oh, yeah. In Tuesday night's episode, there's a shot where Coulson is holding up a tablet, presumably so the person on the tablet can see what he's seeing. But the minute I saw it, I said, you know, that would make a great screen cap, because Coulson's just grinning that crap-eating grin. Just like, I'm going to love what's going to happen next. And I said, we've got to have that for something. So I chat with Mike on it on Facebook, and within about 15 minutes, he goes, oh, you mean like this? And there it is.
So
there you go. You shouldn't have told me all that. You ruined the magic. You would have duped me. I thought you had Agent Coulson in your secret underground volcano lair.
He's the one who issued us this lair, and we're still trying to figure out how we...
I'm still trying to figure out where the Keurig machine is.
I think we have to requisition that still.
That would explain it, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yep. Anyhow, if we don't have anything else, Jarvis, if you would, please.
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?
Nope. Time to go dark.
This has been a Weeby Geeks production.